Welcome to the Driven Women Project podcast, where we believe you do not have to act like a man to succeed like one. I'm your host, Erin Smith, and on this episode, we're speaking with Vasanta Pundarika. Now, if like me, you first hear the term investment banker and think numbers, math, boring, boys club, listen to the depth of knowledge and the passion Vasanta has developed over two decades focusing on investing in healthcare. Vasanta shows us how interesting this career can be. She works at the intersection of healthcare and finance as an investment banker, and she is most passionate about investing in and advancing behavioral and women's health. She's also on the board at Saki, which is for South Asian women. Saki is a New York City-based not-for-profit that represents South Asian survivors of gender-based violence. Vasanta is a frequent panelist or moderator at various healthcare conferences or webinars. And as an avid Princeton alumnus, she is a co-class agent for her class for annual giving and also serves on the National Annual Giving Committee. She also has many passions beyond advancing women's healthcare. She also loves cooking, has a lot of houseplants, loves arts and crafts, and staying healthy and fit with Orange Theory. I'm really excited to share this conversation I had with Vasanta because she is fiercely authentic and has developed an admirable set of core values that guide her, which I think we can all learn from. If you take away one thing from this episode, let it be this. As a woman in a male-dominated career and an immigrant, Vasanta is a shining example of how being different has the power to drive you to want to fit in, unless you decide that being different is awesome, which is exactly what she did. So I suggest you listen all the way through because there are a lot of gems that you wouldn't expect. For example, Vasanta's path from majoring in anthropology to wanting to be a food writer to becoming an investment banker. We also talk about the difference between how men and women build trust in the workplace and how she dealt with men in her office who didn't understand her methods. We talk about how exhausting it is to not be yourself and how that kills trust. How following your passion leads you to figure out the how to make something happen. Because knowing how to do something is not the driver. And not knowing how to do something won't stop you if you have a passion for it. And if you don't have a passion, Vasanta suggests looking for your superpower. What are you really good at? We also talk about how you don't have to subscribe to the belief that competition is best. A rising tide lifts all boats. You can hear this advice, but you don't have to agree with it just because a lot of people say it. But listen as we talk about it and decide for yourself. And don't forget to visit the show notes for links to connect directly with Vasanta or to nominate another driven woman. Enjoy the show and stay driven. Okay, Vasanta, thank you so much for being on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you because to me, you are the epitome of what a driven woman is, in my opinion. You're authentic, you follow your passions, you care about helping and uplifting other women. And I can't wait to talk more about that and how you do that in your work. But first, let's dive in and with my usual opening question, what does being driven mean to you?
You know, I was thinking about this because you told me you were going to start with this question. And, you know, when you think about it's weird because you think about driven, it's like, are you driving or are you being driven by something? Mm-hmm. And I think it's an interesting word because it's a combination of both of those. And I think being a driven woman is you are not sitting with contentment or complacency. And there's something like inside you that is always driving you forward in every aspect of your life, right? There's your job, your health, your strength, your, you know, social life, you know, everything that's going on in your life, and you're driving all of those things forward. Sometimes some things more than others, but there's nothing where you just say, I'm fine with this as it is. You just keep on moving forward and you're always driving towards something. And I think the reason why it's driven is because It's not that you're being driven by something else, it's that you're being driven by something inside you that just keeps propelling you forward. And I just can't imagine a life without that. So it's an interesting question for me because I'm like, how does it feel to not be driven? And that's a completely different thought process, I think. And it's, do you want to be content or do you want to be happy? Whenever someone says that they feel really content to me, I'm like, why would you strive for that? Why wouldn't
Why
you strive
stop
for
there?
happiness? Happiness is so much more fun. Go for that. Like when you're, dancing around, you're really joyous. Like that's what you should be striving for. And that's the kind of driven. So it's not, I think it's not just one aspect of your life, but it's all aspects of your life. And like keep on making new friends. There's that song, like make new friends, but keep the old ones. One is silver and the other is gold.
Yes, I
I'm not gonna
know
sing it for you, so you don't have to listen
the
to my singing voice.
one.
But it's a lot of my friends I've known for, 20, 30, almost 30 years. And then there's other friends that I make that are new, that it's like, every single person that you meet enriches your life, and you just keep. So I think it's even in that, right? You're driving your social circle forward. So I think it's everywhere throughout your whole life. If you're a driven woman, you drive in every direction.
Ooh, I love that. It sounds like you're always growing to me. Like you're always looking to grow. Like no matter where you are, like you constantly just want to know what's next or how could I improve this or what can I learn from this? That's what it sounds like.
Yes, in every aspect, right? And I go to the gym all the time. And when you get to a certain plateau at the gym and you've been going at a certain speed or you've been lifting a certain weight and then you want to, go heavier or go faster. And so it's even in that you don't sit, you just keep on growing in every aspect of your life. I learned how to crochet last year. Well, I did. I mean, to be honest, I knew how to crochet when I was like a little kid. Well, one of my grandmothers knitted and the other one crocheted. So I learned how to do both of those things, at the age of like 5. But I learned how to crochet these little animals last year, and it's been so much fun. It's like, oh, here's a new thing to learn. So you're right. I think it's constant growth in all different aspects of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have a lot of I know a little bit about your hobbies and extracurricular activities. One of my favorites was I don't know if you call this a hobby, but being a clown at the Macy's Day Parade on Thanksgiving, right? You did that this past year.
That was so much fun. After 18 years of living in New York City, I finally found a friend who works for Macy's. And so she volunteered me with her to be a clown. Actually, at first she volunteered me to be a balloon handler. And then she said, well, do you mind if we're clowns instead? I was like, that sounds like way more fun. And so we were wintertime clowns and got to, get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go down to Macy's, get dressed up and go through the parade. And the clowns are there for the people that are actually there in person on the day. And so your whole job as a clown is to make them happy and excited. So you're just like screaming, Happy Thanksgiving, like throwing confetti on these little kids, high-fiving all the little kids. And there were some little kids that, their parents were, tired and exhausted. The kids were tired and exhausted and grumpy. They were just sitting there waiting for Santa to come. And so to high-five some of these little kids and make them smile and laugh was just like, it just brought a smile to my face. I just had so much fun. I was like, this is a great, like, new thing. And so, yeah, I mean, that's another aspect of life, right? You want to be happy and joyous and excited. And that was a really fun extracurricular hobby or whatever you want to call it. It was really exciting.
Yeah, I love that so much. You were spreading the joy and building it in yourself at the same time.
I was completely in my element. It was so fun.
That's amazing. All right. So, let's talk about your day job, investment banking. How did you decide to get into this field? Because, and I want to ask you that because a lot of young women might either not be exposed to it, so they don't even know what it is, or if they are, they might think it's boring or it sounds too hard. So I'm curious to know, like, how did you decide to get into it? Especially because I think it's important to know that your major at Princeton was anthropology, right?
That's right.
So you weren't even like finance, or any kind of
No.
typical major that goes into that type of career. So talk to me about investment banking. How did you get into it? Why?
I don't know if this is the answer you want, but it's the real answer, Aaron.
That's what we're all
It's what
about.
you're gonna get. We're all not real. So I was an anthropology major at Princeton, as you said, and I spent my summers, I worked at a pharmaceutical company one summer, I worked at a law firm one summer. The third summer, I actually went and spent my summer on going on an anthropology expedition in the Himalayas, and then spending a month living in a village in South India so I could write my thesis. So I
Wow.
did a full ethnography for my thesis. So if you notice, none of those are finance internships.
Right.
So
Very
I was
true.
actually going to become a food writer. That's what I really wanted to do. I love food. I still love cooking. I love talking about food, love flavor, everything about it. There's always something new to learn with cooking and food and flavors. So I think that's why I like it. But I wanted to be a food writer. It was 2006. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go to journalism school, be a food writer. In 2006, that was the worst time to try to go in that direction because print journalism was going, in a downward direction. And I'm vegetarian. It wasn't quite the time for that. So I thought, okay, let me take a couple of years and then go to journalism school after that. My father's family is in finance. Well, he's in finance. A lot of them are in finance. And so I thought, okay, let me go. He was kind of pushing me towards like, go do something on Wall Street for a couple of years, and then you can go do whatever else you want. And all a lot of the jobs that I was hearing about were these really, crazy things that I could never have explained to my grandmother. And I wanted a job that I could explain to my grandmother. That's really how I thought about it. I'm trying to put myself in my 21-year-old mind. But I wanted something I could explain to my grandmother, like, this is what I do and this is how I do it. And investment banking is you're advising companies on, buying and selling other companies, or on, getting capital for growth. And so that was something I could explain. And I wanted to do it through one industry so I could really learn that industry because that was what was interesting to me about it, that you really got to know one industry really well. And at the time I was thinking about, energy, technology, healthcare. And I was like, oh, my mom wants me to be a doctor. She's always wanted me to be a doctor. I don't really like things that are gross. So going like biology is not my thing. And so I was like, okay, healthcare, I can do that. And I've always been good at math. That's like an innate, thing. And so there wasn't something about investment banking that was something I couldn't do. It was just something I hadn't actually thought about doing until that point. And so I became a healthcare investment banker 18 years ago, and now I'm still a healthcare investment banker. And that's funny because I really thought I was going to become a food writer. My thesis was about food too. And so it is funny that I have spent 18 years in healthcare, but really what has kept me in, like, in all seriousness, what has kept me in healthcare all this time is healthcare. Healthcare is always changing. There's always something new to learn about healthcare. The industry keeps on changing and growing and evolving. Finance was also changing, growing, and evolving at the time, over these last 18 years, right? There's been multiple market, ups and downs that I've had to learn how to navigate those as well. But the healthcare industry is just fascinating and it's vast. And I work in healthcare services. There's always some new aspect of a company that we can learn about. And that's why I really like being in this space because you get to know these companies really well. You get to understand their sectors, you get to understand their spaces. And the actual healthcare they're providing is really cool. And to have some part of that where you're helping them on the finance side is really fun.
And what is your, do you have a particular passion within healthcare? I know we've talked about, I think you've talked about behavioral health and women's healthcare, in
Yeah.
particular.
It's my I know I have spent a long time in this industry, and almost 2 decades at this point. And at the beginning, I was much more interested in hospitals and healthcare systems and what they were doing. And I'm still interested in what hospitals and healthcare systems are doing. I've not lost that interest, but over time, behavioral health became something that was, really fascinating to me. Because in other parts of healthcare, you have to convince the patient to come to you when they're not well. In behavioral health, there's an added aspect of you need to convince them to get care, and then you have to convince them to come to you. And so there's that added piece that makes me really interested. And so, as I've been spending more and more time in that sector, and there's a lot of, behavioral health is an interesting topic right now. So there's a lot of people that are visiting behavioral health. I've been in behavioral health for almost a decade. So it's, something where I've seen the sector grow and evolve over time. And you become like really passionate about the sector as you're working in it because you learn about the challenges that these companies are facing and what they're facing in Washington and what they're facing locally. It's really interesting what some of these companies have been able to do. And that, I think, propelled, the seeing that industry and seeing that sector within healthcare kind of change and evolve has also propelled part of my interest in women's health. And women's health, if we talked about it, 5, 10 years ago, what we were really talking about was OBGYN and fertility. And now over the last couple of years, women's health is just growing and changing. There's all these companies that are coming up that are, doing like pelvic floor rehab. I always talk about, the reason why there are not more pelvic floor rehab companies, because I know a lot of people, a lot of women that couldn't walk after giving birth. Well, why aren't there more companies that are taking care of them? Well, because they were probably still walking even though they couldn't walk.
Right.
And so
Just
there's
power
this,
through.
yeah, you just power through. Like that's the, you're talking about driven woman here. You just power
Right.
through everything, right?
Keep going. The
There's
show
a
must go
lot
on.
of Exactly. A lot of companies are coming up, like, that treat menopausal care, perimenopausal care, and are actually getting payer contracts for it to cover these things. And I'm pretty excited about where that part of the industry is going. It's a sector that I think was pretty small a couple of years ago and is growing like leaps and bounds every single day. So I'm excited about that.
Wow. Yeah, I want to know more. Bless you.
Thank you.
In so can you give us some examples? I mean, like maybe some past clients you've worked with that you really enjoyed or found to be really interesting. Can you talk about anything like that?
Within these sectors?
Yeah.
I mean, some of these are clients, some of these are not clients, just companies that I know. There's a company that is trying to do alcohol, rehab for alcohol addiction from a telehealth perspective, which I think is really interesting. I think that's going to really help women because a lot of women are, at the linchpin of their communities. And what I mean by that is they're taking care of their, parents that they're aging, they're taking care of their spouses, they're taking care of their kids, they're probably like, driving forward at work, and they're doing all these things. You can't take them out of that ecosystem and, get them into residential care. And so it almost becomes, their AUD, alcohol use disorder, gets worse and worse and worse and worse before they finally, it ends up being like an emergency situation where they have to get into care. And instead, this company is creating, has this like telehealth platform for alcohol use disorder where they can actually get that patient into care while not taking them out of their ecosystem, right? So they can
Wow.
get into care so much faster, and start addressing their AUD so much faster. So it doesn't have to become this, really severe thing over time. Part, as I talked about it before, but part of the, hardest thing about behavioral health, and this is everything, this is mental health, therapy, medical management, TMS, ketamine, alcohol use disorder, substance use disorder, eating disorders, like just like across the whole spectrum. But
Yep.
you don't just have to provide the care, you also have to convince the patient that they need to get the care.
Right.
And I just find this, what this company is doing to be really interesting because they're trying to get people into care faster. And I really like that. On the women's health side, there's a lot of companies that are doing really cool things. I don't want to pick just one, but there's a couple of one company that is focusing on pelvic floor rehab, and they're doing it from a combination of telehealth and physical clinics, which I think is really cool. There's another company that's focused on menopausal care, which I think is really important. There is a lot of women. I just was talking to one of my friends about this recently, who didn't, she thought something was wrong with her. We're all 40, like my friends and I just, I said I've been out of school for 18 years, so anyone could
You
probably have
did
done
the
that
math.
math on their own.
Yep.
She's in menopause and didn't know it. And it took multiple doctor's visits of her thinking that something else was wrong with her,
Wow.
before, finally a doctor tested her for menopause to find out if she was in menopause, and she is. And it's early menopause, but they could have tested her earlier so she didn't have to spend 6 months thinking that something was wrong with her, right? And so I hear so many stories like that, and it's really distressing. It's like if people are asking what keeps you up at night, it's stories like that that keep me up at night. It's like, why are we not actually providing better care? Like, as a woman, I want to be able to always perform at my best and be at my best. And as driven women, we're often fighting through all kinds of stuff to appear to be at our best.
Yep.
And meanwhile, if we actually had a lot of healthcare companies that were focused on treating us and actually paid attention to the things that we were saying when we say this is wrong with me, or I need you to test this, and didn't make us go through 6 months of appointments before they agreed that something was an issue, then we could actually be at our best more of the time. And that is, that's the goal, right? So that we could all, try to be at our best all of the time. And not just only appear to be at our best, but actually be at our best all of the time. You asked me one very short question, and I just talked for like several minutes. So there you go. I'm very excited about this topic, as you can tell.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I was gonna say you did like your passion. I didn't hear you say one thing about investment banking. I mean, other than the fact that that's how you got into this,
Yes.
and found your passion, because you just talked all about women's health and all these obstacles and things that we as women who are probably listening to this are all sitting here nodding our heads, going, "Yep, I totally get it. That's me," or "I know someone." Like it's everywhere. And it affects us all. And the fact that you are in a position where you can do something about it, like you can make change, like you don't have to be in the healthcare industry to do it. You found a way to do it through investment banking, and that's how you connect with and you find clients that are doing cool things, like you said, and helping them do more of of those cool things because you're passionate about helping people and improving the world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You said it really well. I think, there are the founders in healthcare. A lot of them are accidental entrepreneurs. They see a need, they start building a company, and then suddenly they've built like a really good company that needs financial advice and financial help. And I think that's what makes me really excited about these spaces, because I feel like I can be really helpful and effective in these spaces, because that is what I know, right? I know finance. That's the field that I've been in, and I get really excited about these companies because it's fun to see, what your clients are doing. I know this other company that's doing, rural therapy, and therapy is a big problem in rural areas. There's a lot of people that are out there that don't have access to therapy, and they're creating a company that provides rural therapy. It's like, great. How can I help you get more financing to continue to build this company? And so, a lot of that, is really fun when you're talking to your clients and hearing about the things that they're doing. That's what gets me really excited about it.
Yeah, you're in an advisory business, right? That's
Yeah,
you're advising your
absolutely.
clients, you're advising the people and the businesses on, making pretty big decisions about their businesses as well, right? Like sometimes you're helping them
So,
prepare to sell, right? And that's
yeah.
a oftentimes, especially these accidental entrepreneurs. I love that term there. This is a big moment in their lives, right? It could be completely life-changing for them and for all the lives that their businesses are impacting.
It's interesting because, in the business world, if you're able to sell a business and you've been able to make a business so successful that it's you can sell it, somebody wants to buy it, that's a success. And that's a really exciting success. Like, okay, you built this business and then we're going to sell it. And, as an advisor, that's what we do. We walk you through the process of selling your business, or we walk you through the process of getting, large amounts of capital for your business to continue to grow it, which is on the path to then sell it later, right? A lot of business owners that are accidental entrepreneurs and are not necessarily in the business world, they're like, oh no, I had to sell my company. It's like, no, that's not how we're thinking about it. We're thinking about it as like, great, you are such a success. You got to sell your company. And so it's funny how different people have different perceptions of the same thing. But yes, I am in an advisory role, which I love. I think I thrive on that. I enjoy advising people, especially, creating that relationship of trust with a client where they're comfortable asking you about something that they don't know and that you know about. A lot of my clients, they're really smart people, and they're really driven, right? They have built a business, and it's, uncomfortable for them to be in a position where they don't know about something. They don't know about the sales process. What happens next? Why do I need this? Like, why do I need all these people? And so to create that relationship of trust where they are not only comfortable trusting you to sell their business, but they're also comfortable trusting you and asking you questions for things that they don't understand. I had a client once that asked me the same question over and over and over again, and he thought he was wearing out my patience, but it just made me so happy that he was comfortable enough with me. He's a physician, right? He's comfortable enough with me to ask this question so many times because he wanted to understand it from every different angle. And so it actually made me happy every time he asked it because I was like, oh, great. We have this great trusting advisory relationship. You feel comfortable asking me this question without being embarrassed that you're asking me again. And so I thought that was great. It was funny that he thought I was wearing out his my patience, and meanwhile, I was just getting happier. So
That concept of building trust. I mean, when I think about the differences between men and women in this area, I think it's really interesting. I'd like to hear your perspective because I think we both know, we all know men have different styles when it comes to building trust than women.
Definitely.
And you and I have talked about this before. So I'm curious to know from what do you think, how do you build trust? And have you ever come up against any criticism for how you do it?
Yes. So I think, and I mean, I think it's really important. It's men and women, kind of build trust, market, all of those things. You kind of do it a little bit differently. But I think also every person does it a little bit differently. In addition to that, I got a lot of advice over the years. I still kind of, get it. You should market this way, or, you need to be this kind of person. A lot of the people that I was watching market when I was younger, had kind of built the persona that they marketed with, and that's what they were doing. And so at the beginning, when I first started marketing, I thought I was supposed to do that, because that's what I had seen from everybody. And over time, I realized, first of all, it's exhausting. It's exhausting to not be yourself at any point in time. I think it's really important to be yourself because we were just talking for a couple minutes ago about being your best self. It is easier to be your best self if you are actually yourself, and that makes it more natural. But also, in addition to being exhausting, we're trying to build trust here, right? So if you meet someone at a conference and they see you, they chat with you, they get to know you, and then they hear you speak, on a panel, they see you quoted in an article, and they see you on LinkedIn. A lot of clients will look you up on LinkedIn right after they meet you, and they're seeing different people there. How can they trust that, right? And so, what I think what's really important is that they see the same person everywhere that they go. And the only way to be the same person everywhere that you go is if you're yourself. And so I think it's really important to give off the same energy, the same personality, the same person in all of your different interactions. And that is much less exhausting and much more invigorating. And so, my clients know about, the fact that I have 40 plants in my apartment, which is, a little bit crazy, but I got a new olive tree. I'm very excited about that. Just
That's
planted it
amazing.
last weekend. It looks very
Nice.
pretty and nice silvery leaves. But you never know what someone can connect with. I've had clients that have sent me recipes before because they also really like to cook and wanted to know about, because I like to learn new things, how to cook new things. I mean, we talked about growing in every aspect of life. A couple of years ago, I decided I was going to make something new every few weeks, learned how to make tortillas from scratch and refried beans from scratch, sushi from scratch, all these different things. And I think, I was talking with a client about that. I was talking to a client about my renovation when I did that a few years ago with your plants. And I don't know if I've told that many clients about crocheting yet because it's a little bit funny, but now they'll hear about it if they listen to this.
Now we all know.
But they do know, I got into like painting before or quilting, like various different things. A show that you just saw, if you talk about all these things, then it's bring and they when a founder has built a business, when they choose you to be their advisor, they kind of bring you into their business a little bit. And so you're bringing them into your world by sharing your authentic self. And I know I'm joking about all these things with, talking about plants and cooking and stuff, but I'm also not, because I do talk about all that stuff. I talk about, all my clients know that I do Orange Theory because it's something that we can then connect with. And I've had clients start doing Orange Theory before because I was talking about it, and tell me what they thought about it. So I think, all these things where you are your actual self and you are your authentic self, and then they meet you in different instances and they meet you on different occasions and see the same person. I think that really helps build up trust. and it is more invigorating for you. And I think that that's when they can, that's when they know that they can then, ask you a question about networking capital and you're going to answer that question and they can
Yep.
trust your answer and they can, ask you that question about how do we negotiate, this aspect of the transaction, and so on and so forth.
Wow. Yeah, this is exactly why I brought you on this on the show. Because that's so, there's so many things. I know authenticity is a buzzword these days, but it really does cover so many things. Like you just talked about building trust, finding common ground, being less exhausted by, not having to perform a different persona or character depending on what environment you're in. And it's all about, being consistent, being consistently yourself. But so my question for you is, have you always been that way, or do you remember a time when maybe like you were trying to fit into, let's call it the bro culture of investment banking? Yeah, talk to me about that.
Definitely. I mean, I think I'm all a little bit quirky, so I'm a little bit quirky. So there is that, but there was definitely a time that I was trying to fit in more into the bro culture of, it's not as much investment banking, but like all the, PE guys that we have to talk to, and girls, but they're all,
PE,
majority men, right?
private equity for those
Private
listening,
equity, yes.
yeah.
And I can hold my own in those situations, but it's a lot more fun now that I can hold my own while still being myself. And I think there was a point at which, and I don't really remember when this happened, but there was a point at which I, suddenly had the realization, like, okay, I don't have to, I can be around them and hang out with them, but I don't have to become them. I can still be me. And that realization was a little bit life-changing. It probably was a few years ago, but it came up over time. It wasn't just, one light bulb moment or anything. But you can go to these conferences, and I go to the conferences all the time. I go to healthcare conferences and I go to, finance conferences. And the situations are very different. But in all of the situations, you can be there and be yourself, and still find people to talk to and still go out and do that. I do think, this is not the question that you asked me, but I'm going to say this separately. But I see, as far as like, have you always been that way, or have things changed over time? I do think COVID made me realize how extroverted I actually am, and I don't think I knew it before. But I live by myself in New York City, and there was a point in time at the beginning of COVID when I was actually by myself for, several days in a row, a couple
Yeah.
months actually. And I think, and I was constantly on the phone with people. And I think when we came out of that, I was asking one of my friends, like, why do you think I'm so tired? And she said, well, because you started talking so much more during COVID because you didn't have people to talk to in the evening. And then now you do have people to talk to in the evening. You're out doing things and you're still doing all of your small talk stuff that you do all day long. And at the same time, you're still talking all day. So that's why it's like you haven't adjusted yet to this new
Yeah.
normal. But now, a couple of years later, I have adjusted to that new normal.
Okay.
And I mean, I just love chatting. And so I'm out there chatting all the time. And I think it has been more fun to actually become more myself. I was telling a couple of my friends from high school this like a couple of months ago. I was like, I am more myself now than I have ever been my whole life. And I was like, I don't know if that makes sense, but that is the fact.
That is, I feel the same way, and that's what I think turning 40 does for you. So for all the ladies out there who have not turned 40 yet, don't worry. It's amazing. You feel more yourself, you can be more authentic, and you care a little bit less what other people think of you. I mean, you still care what people think, but not in the same way that you did before, I'm guessing, right? Like it's not a worry like, are they going to like me? It's more like, I want to know what they think of me to collect information so that I know how to interact with them. Versus like, do I need to change who I am or do I
Oh
need to
yeah, there's no
adjust,
changing
right?
who you are anymore. No, no,
Yeah.
no. Yeah,
No.
that's the thing. So I've been 40 for almost 2 months now. And full disclosure, I panicked for an entire year between the day I turned 39 and the day I turned 40. So
Yep.
there was a full year of panic. So I don't want to pretend that that did
There's
not
that
really,
too. I
that
remember
happened. There was
that.
that for 12 months. But now being, almost 2 months into being 40, completely agree. There's anything that anyone else thinks about you, it's like, oh great, that's interesting, and it's like a collection of a piece of information, just like you said. There's no like, oh, I need to change myself or anything, because at 40 you now know, like, I'm not changing. This is who I am. This is my personality. And I don't mean that from the way of like I'm not changing, like I'm not growing. I think you need to continue to grow. I think you should always, as a person, continue to grow and build. And we've talked about that, like being a driven woman, that's what it means. Not to bring it back to that, but there is an aspect of like your own personality. You're going to grow your own personality to be more of what it is, and not change it. Like that's not the point. It's really fun to be 40 and to kind of be like, okay, great. This is what's happening now, and this is how I'm moving forward. So.
Yes, I love the way you said that. You're expanding more of yourself instead of changing it or adjusting it anymore. It's like you kind of figured out who you are now, and
That's exactly right.
the growth is just on top of that. It's not, you might probably pick up some new character traits or things that you find work for you as you go along, but mostly you're just like, I know who I am, and I'm going to keep improving on those aspects that work for me.
Yeah, and I think that's really important at work too, because if you know who you are, you know which aspects of your personality, and how you work and how you do things, are the great ones, like what are your superpowers, then you can continue to build and grow those more. I remember we did this personality test years ago at one of those, conference things that you have to go to in finance that they make you go to. And it kind of gave you like, oh, here are your top 10 strengths, but only focus on these top three. And you actually had to like pay extra to find out what numbers,
Of course.
four through 10 were. And out of curiosity, like I always have to like know everything, so I needed to know what that was. And so I found out all of them, but they said, really focus on your top three. I think that's so important, because you can't do everything and you can't be everything, but if you focus on your superpower strengths and continue to push those forward, I think it'll help you move forward at work too. Like when we're talking about building strengths, building trust and things like that, like I know that being able to form a connection with someone, like a personal connection with someone, is one of my strengths. And that's why I go at it from that angle, because it is an important thing to notice, not to notice, but to know what your own strength is, and to build that connection in that way. And just like, generally in life, like if you know that, being passionate about something, I mean, so now I'm talking about myself. If I know that being passionate about something and caring about something is a way that I can affect more change, like last year I decided, there had been a not-for-profit that had been following for a couple of years, and I really wanted to be on the board of that not-for-profit. So, I figured out how to get connected through my cousin, who knew someone who knew someone who knew someone, to the executive director. I think like 2 months later I was voted onto the board. It's really exciting for me. Like every hour of time that I spend, whether it's on a board meeting or a finance committee meeting, like I know the type of people that we're helping, and I know what we're doing, and I know the great work that we're doing. And that is really meaningful and exciting to me. And so I think, I know that one of my superpowers is to be passionate about things. And so I was kind of trying to follow that and say, okay, what am I passionate about? Okay, like I'm going to be really invested and excited about a board of an organization that, does something that I'm going to be really passionate about. And this organization helps, like, South Asian survivors of gender-based violence. And so I think that is something, these women are, survivors of gender-based violence, and so to be able to do something to help them, like that's really something that I care about a lot. So I'm, all in on being really involved in that board, and it's really exciting now, 6 months, 7 months later, so.
Yeah, that must feel really amazing. I mean, to be aligned like that with you, your passions, and I mean, your passions include helping other people, so helping women especially. So you're looking for you know that about yourself, so you're looking for, and thus you see those opportunities, and then it probably makes it easier for you, I'm guessing, to make those connections. Like you heard you say you had a like your cousin who knew someone who knew someone who knew someone. Like some people might look at that and go, I don't know, how would I get on that board, or how would I do that? But you're like, I see where I need to go, so I'm going to follow the steps that I need to do to take to get there.
Yeah, and it's, I'm kind of person like once I decide I'm doing something, I like make it happen and drive forward towards it. It might
Driven.
take me a long time to make that decision, but once the decision's made, I'm like, okay, this is what I'm doing.
Unstoppable.
Yeah, and so it's when you are, for me, I know like when I'm really interested in something and when I'm really passionate about something, it is really easy for me to spend time doing it and really really easy for me to focus on it. I mean, actually, not to talk about COVID again, but at the beginning of COVID, I like didn't stop working because I was like really excited about all my clients, right? And they were in trouble because it was a healthcare crisis, and so I
Yeah.
was kind of working around the clock. And one of my best friends has a dog, and so she was taking her dog for a walk every morning, and I realized like, okay, I need to take myself on a walk every morning. And so I literally took myself on a walk every morning because otherwise I could spend 24/7, focus on something that I'm really excited and passionate about. The lucky thing for me is I'm really excited and passionate about a lot of different things. And so, now I find that I am moving in a lot of different directions at the same time. And it's funny because as a driven woman, like one of the things that you don't get to do is to like sit around and do nothing. Because I'll like today's Thursday. I'm like, oh, I'm really looking forward to the weekend where I can sit down and spend a couple of hours just chilling. And then by the weekend rolls around, I'll have like decided to do something else. And so then that
There's
won't happen.
no
But
downtime.
yeah.
But you're always doing something interesting, I think. I mean.
But that's why, I mean, that whenever you're doing something interesting, it's exciting. And it really you can be going in 100 different directions if you're doing interesting things, I think. And what's interesting to you, like what's interesting to me is probably very different than what's interesting to you or to someone else. And I find that when I'm doing things that I'm interested in, I can just keep on doing them and keep working on those things. And it's exciting. And I mean, I'm really lucky because talking to people is not something that exhausts me. So I can be out, networking with people, talking with people, building a community, and then come home and work on something else, and just keep going. Because as we talked about a couple minutes ago, I am very, very extroverted.
Yes.
So
Yes, you discovered that. And
did discover that. But I think that's why I think everyone should figure out their own superpower and what is good for them. It might not be running after passionate things. It might be something that's like, I like things that are really orderly, or I like things that don't require me to talk to a lot of people.
Yes.
I am also lucky in that as extroverted as I am, my sister isn't, and she makes fun of me a lot for how extroverted I am. And so I also understand people that are not as extroverted because I can see that firsthand. Because nobody will tell you the truth like your siblings.
Very true.
That's where you get the real truths.
Or kids. I think kids also have the ability to look at you and see
Probably.
something that they'll just like, from the mouths of babes, right? Like
Yeah.
that saying, like kids say the
Yeah.
darndest things. My nieces and nephews are like little truth
Truth tellers.
tellers. And I'm like, thank you. I'll take that to heart.
You
Thank you
for
so
this
much.
information.
Thank you for the data point. So I guess one last question for you before we go. What kind of advice would you give to, I guess, your younger self when you were first starting out? Something you know now that you wish you had known then. What would you tell yourself if you could go back?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'm first generation immigrant. My parents came here from India. I'm the oldest. My sister and brother and I were all born here. I think there's an aspect of, a lot of things in school. There's an aspect of being a first generation immigrant, where a lot of things in school, like I would learn about Thanksgiving, and then I'd come home and tell my parents about Thanksgiving. So then we would all know about Thanksgiving, for example, or what traditions do people have? Because it's like before the internet, right? What traditions do people have at Christmas? And I would learn about it in school. I'd come home and tell my parents, and then we'd all know about it. And there were some things that like I didn't learn that my sister would learn, and she'd come home and we'd all learn about that kind of thing. My brother is, 6 years younger than my sister. And so I'm sure there's some things that he learned too that he told us about. But I think over time we like learn how American society works, and just as we'd figured that out, we moved to London. So there's that too. When I was 12. But there is an aspect of always wanting to fit in, and always wanting to, be this same as everyone else and not to be different and try and fit into everything because, you felt so different that you didn't want to be different. And there is a point much more recently, I don't even know if it was sometime in the last decade probably, where I realized, hey, I am different and that's awesome. And I can't again pinpoint the exact moment that that happened. I am different and that is awesome. But when that did happen, it was really life-changing, and really freeing to say, okay, I am different and that is cool. I am different and that is awesome. And I wish that my younger self, the self that I was in, elementary school, middle school, high school, college, and throughout all my 20s, knew that it was cool to be different as opposed to wanting so desperately to fit in. And I don't think, I said earlier with, we were talking about, the finance bro culture, that you don't have to turn into them to be part of that group. Like you can still be yourself. You can hang out with them and be around them, but you don't turn into them. You can still be yourself. And be part of that culture. I don't know that I would have come to that particular realization if I hadn't first come to the realization of it is awesome to be different. It is awesome to be cool. And when I first started going to conferences, I would often go to them with, one of my coworkers. She and I worked together for like 17, 16, 17 years. And we were always noticeable everywhere because we were, two women walking around at these conferences. And at first that made me uncomfortable, like, oh God, everybody can see us and remember us. And then later I was like, oh yeah, everyone can see us and can remember us. Like we're awesome.
I love that. Yes.
That's pretty cool. Like pretty cool. So yeah. And I think also, this is probably less relevant to younger women today, but they're the women that were above us when we were, in our early 20s, were kind of saying like, hey, only one person can come to the top, so don't be like too friendly with everyone around you, and you just have to make sure that you're out for yourself. And I just don't agree with that. A lot of guys were saying that too. I got that advice a lot from a lot of different people. And I just do not agree with that. I think that a rising tide lifts all boats. I think that the real concept to me, actually, I didn't even say this at the beginning. I'm going to say it now. To me, being driven means you drive forward and you bring everyone else along with you. And I think that I can't believe I didn't say that at the beginning because I believe that so wholeheartedly. I think that is so important. And I think that at work, I think when you drive forward, you bring everyone else along with you. And I think that in every other aspect, whenever I learn about something new, I'm like a spokesperson for it. I'm constantly talking about it. I think it's so, I think you need to share all the new things that you learn and be out there. Something that's awesome, why not share with other people and get them to do it too? And I think when you learn something, from a growth perspective about yourself, let's tell everyone else about it too, because maybe they don't have to go through the, trouble of, taking another 2 years to learn that. And maybe that's the extrovert of me, I don't know, but maybe I wholeheartedly believe that. That's why I'm a member of Chief, which is a women leaders organization. I just joined WBL, which is the Women Business Leaders of the U.S. Healthcare Industry. So I'm really excited about that because I think it's everybody. I think it's not just women pulling up other women. I think that we need to pull everybody up all together. And I'm a huge women's soccer fan, and I see that with a lot of the women soccer players, like when they go up, like they like pull everyone along with them. And so I'm like really, I'm a fan of that aspect. Whenever I see it happening anywhere, I see you do it, and you're pulling up other people alongside you. And it's why one of the reasons why I respect you so highly. So I think that I think that's really important. I just spent, I told you before in this in a conversation, I have a lot of friends that I've had for years and years and years and years, and friends from middle school that, I'm still very close friends with. We talk all the time. Friends from high school, college. I just spent a weekend in Puerto Rico with all my college friends, friends from my early 20s that we're all still, really close and talk daily. And I would love if we were all like growing and building and driving forward together, because I think that's so important. And I hope I embody that in my everyday life, because that's what I'm striving towards.
Oh my God, Vasanta. I have chills listening to you. And I know everyone who's listening to this is also going to agree that everything you just said is pure gold. The advice that you would give to your younger self and to highlight the differences of what it used to be like versus now, only a short period of time too, because I know we're both 40, but like that's not
No.
that old. So to see the changes happening that quickly, I think is really invigorating as well. But
Exciting.
yeah, it is really cool. But yeah, I get that. I get that too, that there, when I was younger, and first started out, in my first job in private equity, I learned very quickly that there was this competitive, cutthroat, women not supporting other women kind of environment. And aside from that, I liked the intensity of the environment, but that one part of it was so demoralizing, and I didn't feel like that was who I wanted to become. So I love how you frame that. Like, you can be around these people, but you don't have to become them. Like, that takes some strength and that takes some self-actualization and self-awareness. But if you have it, if you can look at yourself and get to know yourself, then you can be armed, to do that and to help others along the way.
One thing, and we've talked about like how things have changed over time, how we've learned about ourselves over time, but one thing I'm really proud of is, as much as I tried to fit in and do all of those things, younger, when I was younger, I definitely did not ever subscribe to that theory of, only one person rises. And I am really proud of myself in my 20s for not subscribing to that, and to say like, no, like we're all gonna rise together. Because I think it is so important. And whenever I see anywhere on the internet, on LinkedIn or in person, women supporting other women, or people supporting other people that are in the same industry, same field, or other fields, and this, instead of competing with each other, I just love it. I think it's so exciting. It makes me so happy, because it is such a difference from such a short time ago. Like, I don't know that we would have seen it as much 10 years ago as we do today. And 10, I cannot like pinpoint what year things happened in the last 10 years. It was like a blur. And so in that blur of the last 10 years, so much has changed, and it is so exciting. And I feel like we're on the cusp of something, and that we are continuing to drive forward on the cusp of that thing. And you can see that in women's health, because women's health is growing leaps and bounds like today. And so that's what makes me so excited about it. And so excited about every time I have a conversation about somebody with somebody about a women's health issue that they have, I'm just like, yes, there's going to be a company very soon that does this. I'm sure of it, because that's how quickly it's evolving, because we as a society have evolved so much over the last decade. Where 10 years ago it was like one person gets to the top, and now it's like we can all rise to the top. And I'm so excited. I'm excited about all of that. And I think that optimism is really important in today's world. I don't want to talk about all the pessimistic things, so I'm just going to stick to that. Optimism is really, 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 really important in today's world. And I think if we're all being inspired by all these things, it'll help us all push forward.
Oh my gosh, amazing. So inspiring. Before we sign off, is there anything else that you want to add or any place you want people to go to learn more about you and your work?
You can go on my LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
Because I said earlier that if you are the same person everywhere, then you can see you as the same person everywhere. So I try to put myself out on LinkedIn, because I think it is important to be yourself there. There's no pictures of my plants on LinkedIn though.
I was going to ask you, do you name your plants? I know some people do that.
No, because I get really sad when my plants die. So
Oh.
if I actually had to re I had to say bye-bye to my lemon plant last weekend.
Oh.
My parents are visiting, and I was sitting on the couch looking at my lemon tree on Sunday morning, and I guess I like sighed at it too many times and said it was making me so sad that it was dying. My mother was like, "You just need to replant something else in that pot. Like, stop being sad about it." And so now the olive tree is in that pot.
Gone. Okay.
So the olive tree is very happy in its new home. And I also think I jinxed the lemon tree because I said when I got the olive tree, I was thinking it would be really nice to have another pot like this one that the lemon tree is in for the olive tree. And so I think I jinxed it. But
Yeah.
that is why I do not name my plants, because I am already sad enough when
Okay,
plants die. Interestingly, I don't name my car either. My car is like a bright blue color, like the most ridiculous color blue you could possibly
Oh
think
yeah.
of. And people always ask me if I named it, and I was like, no, I don't, because I don't want anything. I don't like anything to happen to things that I've named, and
Yeah.
things that happen to things like that. So,
I got a little bit of a detachment going on there, so
yeah,
you don't have to
exactly.
be too
I'm
sad.
already attached enough. I don't need any more.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for everything, your guidance, your advice, your insights. I'll include your LinkedIn profile in the show notes, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. As always, take the messages you've heard here and try them on like an outfit. If it doesn't fit, don't try to force it. If it does fit, great. Consider sharing the episode, or even better, leave us a review. And if you or another driven woman you know would be willing to share her proverbial closet of advice about working in a male-dominated field, see the notes below for a link to nominate her to be on the show. Until next time, stay driven.